Hey Fadies, thanks for listening to The Fate of Ison, Chapter 5, Episode 13. Lucky number 13. Unlucky number 13. Indifferent number 13. However you want to feel about the number 13, I'm DM Brad, and it's awesome to have you here with us. We've had a lot of people join us on Discord lately to discuss the story and to drop requests and suggestions for things to come. We bloody love that, and if you have anything you want to say to us, please feel free to do it. Just do it! You can join us on Discord by following the invite link on our website, fateofison.com, or you can get in touch with us on most of the social media networks at Fate of Ison. When you reach out, it really makes us feel great about this piece of fantasy audio art? Question mark? That we're all creating together. The Apple Squaddeth is making their way toward their big bad goal right now, so let's just dive right in to the recap. Last time, our heroes woke up on the coast of the wild and encountered some gigantic crabs investigating their beached vessel. They began trekking southwest through an ocean of tall grass, spying many large beasts as they roamed. Eventually, they came to a long abandoned, dilapidated village and decided it was the perfect place to rest for the night. And then she goes up to the one that says store above the door and she turns a handle and the door creaks and then she just sort of walks into a dark room, which she is now lighting with her torch.
Bevor strolls over and looks through the window.
You see inside what is obviously a small shop. There's barrels, there's like a big row of shelves on the back wall with what looks like a bar or like a countertop. Standing out of one of the barrels is five like rusty old javelins, almost as if to replace the javelins you lost fighting the shark.
Bevor collects his five rusty javelins.
Okay, so you go in. And this building is pretty decently intact.
I feel like we're definitely getting attacked. Bevor has collected these five rusty javelins and has transferred the paddle crab into a moist blanket that he's kept in his pack. And so thus his shield is free and rotating around him. Just FYI.
Yeah, there's lots of barrels and like keg-like things in this room. In fact, there is even a keg with a tap on it, as well as lots of jars and pots and bowls, some of which have things like daggers and stuff like that. This is clearly just an all-purpose store from some time ago.
Bevor investigates the room looking for anything of value.
Okay, roll an investigation check.
Cool. Not good. That is an 8.
You just notice the stuff that I just described. You just see jars and pots with daggers and knives and basic necessities, a couple like crossbows on the wall, and things that look like maybe at one point they had food in them, but they don't obviously have food in them anymore. But yeah, you notice nothing special, and Nio is just waving this torch around, trying to look at things, blowing dust off of labels and stuff. And then she goes up to one of the barrels and she's like, "Oh, this one's got water in it. Do we need water?"
"Well, we have some water, but I mean, how old's that water?"
Does oldness really matter with water? All water's very old.
Well, stale and potentially poisoned.
Bacterial load is a problem. If you want to have the next 3 weeks shit in fucking water. As somebody who's drunk water that a possum fell into 6 months prior, it's not fun.
Yeah, but you boil it.
The possum. Do we?
Yeah. Good meat possum.
Yeah, no, so Bamfor cracks the lid of this water and gives it a snuff.
It smells kind of musty. You wouldn't want to drink it, but you might drink it if you had to.
Bevor grabs the goblin and puts its head in.
This is just getting aggressive.
She kicks and fights and, as if
then Bevor pulls the goblin out. Vanfor pulls the goblin out and just goes, see, now we'll figure out if it's all right to drink, won't we?
Oh, you. She dropped the torch and it is still lit on the floor.
Vanfor picks up the torch and says, you've lost torch privileges.
You drowned me.
You drowned yourself with your silly questions.
Unbelievable.
Vanfor goes over to the keg.
Molly's cleaning her fingers with a dagger and says, are you sure you don't want to go home?
Banfor's wandered over to the keg aforementioned, because I'm pretty sure beer doesn't get better with age, but I'm 99% sure that I'm going to fucking find out.
Okay, what do you do with this keg? It's a small, like, mini keg, and it's got a tap on it.
Banfor turns the tap.
It's very obviously, by the smell, whiskey.
Banfor closes the tap immediately. And is the goblin within arm's reach?
Yeah, she is.
Banfor grabs the goblin.
What are you doing?
Banfor puts the goblin under the tap and turns the tap on very briefly.
Arcus, help me!
He's going to kill me! I'm waving from outside the store. Hi!
Banfor tests the whiskey with the goblin.
Well, you like force it down her gullet or something.
I just chuck a bit in her, it's like a quick turn, and then I just sort of set her up and just keep an eye.
Okay. She takes a small taste and then she pauses for a moment and then goes,
that's not bad. Maybe that tastes like what I had with Lord Greenmire before he sent me out here.
The problem is if she dies, you won't know if it's from the water or from the whiskey.
No, it's from either. I don't know.
Wait, Banfor
dusts off a bowl, a smallish bowl, like a little ramekin, dusts it off, fills it with whiskey and hands it to El Goblin and just says, oh, have a sip, mate. Go on, what were you saying about Lord What's-His-Face?
She slurps it back and she's like,
Yes, that's good. The Lord that I work for, Lord K.B. Greenwine.
Oh, yeah.
In Osric.
Yeah. How's he doing? Is he all right?
He's all right. He sends me on voyages and to send messages. Yeah,
Let me just drop that up for you. And Banfor drops it up and hands it back.
All right.
Oh, yeah. What's he look like, this Lord Greenwine?
She just nat one to consafe. This whiskey is stronger than you anticipated, and she immediately starts to just go,
he's a big fat, but he's nice. He's a big fat nice.
He's a big fat nice man.
He's got a lot of money. How long
have you been working for him? A lot of money, eh?
Born into his service. My mother and father, they worked for K.P. Greenmire, and now I work for K.P. Greenmire, and I'm never going to have kids.
Would you be able to point someone to where he keeps all that money? I mean, it's a lot of money. It's got to be in a big room, doesn't it?
If we ever make it back to Osrin.
I'm sure we'll make it back to Osrin. I mean, I'm sure if you had to describe to me what this room looks like, where he keeps all this money, how would it look?
I've never been in the vault, but I could tell you where in his house it would be.
Yeah, whereabouts would he keep that? I mean, I'm a bit of a vault expert, so I do like to hear how they're set up.
Well, he's got a big study, and there's a bookshelf with a secret compartment.
Could you describe the book or lever that opens up the thing? I'm a bit of an aficionado of secret rooms as well. I don't know if you knew that.
The book has a picture on it of a rainbow.
Book of a rainbow. Very, very interesting. Yeah, have another little cup here, mate. Have another little cup here.
She vomits on it.
Banfor puts a friendly arm around her shoulder and then hits her on the back of the head with a brick.
I'd say that's enough to put her out for the night. She's done. She's asleep.
Banfor puts her in a nice little drawer and then closes the drawer.
Oh my gosh.
She is now sleeping in a drawer. Okay.
And then with a dagger, crudely draws a goblin on it so it doesn't forget. Because otherwise he'd write goblin, but he can't write.
It's here from Marley and Arcus.
I'd like, are there any any sort of cloths or blankets or just like sacks maybe around in the store?
Yeah, there are some sacks. There, it looks like there were some cloths, like bolts of fabric on one of the shelves, but they're all sort of eaten by time. Like really, you look at them and you can tell if you touch them, they'll just sort of disintegrate. But yeah, there are some sacks.
All right, I grab some sacks and I go over to the drawer and I like give her a little pillow and a little blanket and I pull the drawer out just like a little bit so she can breathe. And I put her in the recovery position in case she throws up again.
What a good friend.
I would like to go around the houses and I just want to see if there are any like, maybe there were kids living in the town and maybe they had a dollhouse or something. That's what I'm looking for.
Okay. Yeah. So you look around. You've got dark vision, don't you?
Yeah, I do have dark vision. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you can see inside all these dark buildings without having to illuminate them at all.
Love that for me.
And in one of them, you look through the window and you clearly see like a desk. And on the wall above the desk is a picture that's been obviously drawn by a child of what looks like a village. Like there's a couple of houses really crudely drawn. You know, kids draw like a pentagon basically as a house. And it's
really, like, guys, I found a map.
It's got like a really bright blue sky and a rainbow on it, and people smiling. And next to it is a picture that looks quite similar, but like it's nighttime, like the sky has been colored black and people are not looking happy, and there's like these like bat creatures on it.
I collect these pictures to show to the rest of my party, not because I think there's anything up with it. I just like art. I appreciate the arts.
Look at these two contrasting images.
Yeah, look at the juxtaposition between the happiness in the daytime and the pure terror at night. I mean, that's me. I can come and bring it to you guys.
I mean, as far as we can tell, you're just over there appreciating art.
No, I grab the art and I bring it back to everyone.
Banfield looks at it and concludes that it is definitely art. 100% undeniably, that is art.
Is there a signature on the art so I can like?
It's written really crudely in crayon, clearly like a child's writing, with a cute backwards S. It says Daisy.
Cool, I like it. It's like a Pollock type thing, right? Like my kid could have done this.
Molly was just cooking rations in the store. She like made a little area where she sort of set up a stove and stuff, and she was just busy cooking rations so that everybody would have dinner.
While you cook and while Banfor gets Nio shit-faced, pass out drunk, and while Arcus investigates the local art scene, Hodge, I presume, is just with you, or is he exploring the area?
Nah, he'd be kind of like outside, like being good boy, sort of watching the door, you know, like waiting for his dinner as well. You know, it's sort of like domestic bliss boringness, because I'm expecting this is just like a day in our trip, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm just like, yeah, this is just we're just having dinner and gonna sleep and then.
Yeah, not every day has to be a big adventuring day. Some days are just days.
Yeah. I'm trying to conserve energy and I'm sort of caught up in thinking about what we're going to do when we find Gilliff anyway. I'm not really worried about what happens in the, you know?
Yeah.
Like, shit is probably going to happen, but she's not worried about it or thinking about it. Yeah.
Yep. No, that makes perfect sense. So the sun begins to fade on the horizon and we enter night and there are crickets chirping away in the air. You hear just like distant growls and things of wild animals prowling on their evening hunts.
Banville goes out to the porch and has a sleep after a fair amount of that whiskey.
Cool, so you drink yourself to sleep.
I guess Marley's just sleeping as well. And like Hodge's still outside by the door, so something would, like, someone was going to try and come in, they'd have to trip over Hodge first, so.
And Banfor.
Yeah.
I'll just hang up my little art pieces in a corner. Just so I've got my wall of art, and then I'll curl up into a ball, into a cloud, if you will.
Curl up into like a Sonic the Hedgehog, but a cloud.
Yeah, exactly. To preserve energy, like cloud form.
Yeah. Just as you all settle in for the night and Banfor's asleep and things are quiet, you hear a horrifying screeching sound that like pierces the night. And it's quickly followed by another horrifying screeching sound. And by another horrifying screeching sound. And these three, whatever they are, screeching back and forth, and it's creating this very loud, very disturbing chorus of creature sounds.
Just like back home.
Just like back in the trailer park.
Like loud enough to wake us up, Brad, or? Oh,
definitely, yeah.
Definitely? Okay, cool.
Banvor wakes from his slumber and sort of has his shield sort of hovering over him, and sort of picks up his axe and sort of lights a torch and throws it out into the street, writes another torch and throws it out into the street, and just sort of keeps ready just in case anything's coming.
So the tall grass that fills the street between the two rows of houses catches a blaze and becomes a giant bonfire, just whoosh, and it lights up the night.
And stuffs my dark vision as it goes.
Yeah, anyone with dark vision's like, oh shit, fuck. Like wearing night vision goggles and someone turns the lights on.
Yeah, like that kind of scenario.
And Banfor, in this bonfire light, you see hovering above the two rows of buildings are three humanoid bat-like creatures with like really pointy ears and pointy facial features and claws at the end of their wings and things, and they are all
it's man bats.
They are like three man bats from the DC Comics universe. And
if anybody would like to, you can Google Vargeist, Varghest. It's a Warhammer beastie from the Vampire Counts army. It's a fun mutation of the vampire strain, but going towards the bestial side. Like, imagine like a vampire stuck halfway between man and bat, but powered by both senses. It's quite the thing to see.
If listeners at home want to Google that, Oliver Scripps has made his recommendation. Now go do it before he banfalls you upside the head.
With a goddamn brick, you savages.
Wow. Thank you. Half a break.
Thank you for listening, and thank you to our Patreon supporters for continuing to support this increasingly aggressive podcast that actively defies your listenership. We do love you, but it may not seem like that sometimes. Yes, you see three of those. To differentiate between them, one of them is like a charcoal grey.
One has a polka dot sweater. One is a darker grey. One has a fun little hat.
One is charcoal grey, one is black as night, and one is tan, like a good old set of good old pair of chinos.
Like Brad's pants.
I'm wearing chinos that are also tan.
We know.
Black, tan, and what?
Charcoal grey.
Got it.
Is that their skin colour, Brad?
That is the fur colour, actually.
Fur?
What do bats have? Fur or hair?
Well, it depends if they're human.
Yeah, they're mammals.
But if they're a Varghest, then they've come from human towards bat. Then they have fur, they have hair.
Okay.
Or do they grow fur when they become a bat? Because if it was a werewolf situation, you'd be growing fur, not hair.
Molly shoots a crossbow!
Okay, roll initiative, everybody.
I'd like to say that I will also do that.
Shoot a crossbow.
I got 5.
I got 9.
22!
Okay. So, Marley, cool. You stumble out onto the porch and see this has woken you up. There's a bonfire in the street, which will very soon start to threaten the buildings, I'm sure.
Sure.
And there are three bat-like creatures in the air just above you, and you fire your crossbow. So roll to attack one or more of them.
Well, actually, technically, I cast Hail of Thorns first, and then I fire my crossbow.
Sing a little song. I'm gonna cast a hail of thorns up in your face, bitches.
Oh. Hey, Brad, I know you love it when this happens.
Chaos Curse?
Yeah, you wanna give me one of them?
Okay, roll a d100.
You explode.
You die.
Marley dies. The last thing she does is reaches out and stabs the fucking goblin. I will have a 14, please. I don't think we've fed that low, have we?
I don't know. 14. Oh, we've had 14 before. In fact, 14 is the very first one we ever had underneath the Royal Keep in Stonewall.
Tree.
You turn into
a tree.
A tree.
I remember the first one ever.
You can take no actions, and your AC is 10.
So cool. You're fighting.
How long does it last for?
Until your next turn.
Okay. Here's a question for you.
Yep.
Because I now no longer really have a turn, does that mean that I can actually tell Hodge to do something?
No.
You're
because
a tree.
He goes in Lego?
Yeah, you can't tell him anything. You're a tree.
No, I know, but like, because Hodge acts independently, kind of me, but kind of with me.
Yeah, well, so you went to fire your crossbow as your action, and that failed, and in doing so, you turned into a tree. So you're like, cast your hail of thorns, you held your crossbow up aimed, and then suddenly, bloop, you're a fucking tree on the front porch of this building that is soon to be under threat from fire. What a weird way to start a fight.
Almost on fire and a tree? I agree. It's got a couple of problems coming up.
Okay. No, that's cool. If it says if I'm incapacitated, which I would class myself as a tree, it just, it focuses on protecting me and itself.
Okay.
I would argue that every tree is incapacitated.
It can do things like dodge easily. Just so you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. So the tan one is the first to act. Let's see, what's it going to do? It's going to do a frightening screech. So it's going to fly down a bit closer to all of you who are standing grouped near each other on this porch. One of you is a tree, though.
Mm-hmm. No, there's just a tree on the porch. Nothing to see here.
And the two of you who can need to roll a wisdom save. Marley, I guess you are immune to this while you are a tree.
Yeah. This might work out in my favor.
Oh my god, that's a three. I'm going to use a luck point on that.
I got 8.
I'm going to use another luck point, just FYI. Thank fucking god, it's 11.
Okay, and what did you get, Arcus, sorry?
I got 8.
Okay, so both of you are...
Oh god damn it.
Frightened for one.
At least it wasn't the natural one.
So this will last for a full minute. But you do get a chance to save at the end of your next turn. But basically, so you are terrified of this particular one. You're terrified of the tan one.
It looks the most naked.
it looks like it's wearing, just a like naked skin suit. You have disadvantage on everything you do, basically, while the subject of your fear is in sight. And you can't willingly move closer to the tan one.
Can't move closer, okay.
Yep.
But we can attack it.
If it comes to you, but you can attack it with disadvantage. Or you can attack it at range. Yeah. And then the black one is going to swoop down, and it is going to attack Banfor.
Go to the air.
With its claws. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Oh, I can only do one attack. Lame. But that is a 22 to scratch you with its claws.
Which passes my AC.
Which passes your AC. You haven't raged yet either because it hasn't been your turn.
I know. I'm aware of this.
7 slashing and 12 psychic.
19 damage.
Yeah. So you get this sort of burning slashing across some exposed part of your body.
And my penis.
And also your brain hurts at the same time.
Is your the brain is the weakness. My penis is always exposed, Marley.
Right, I feel like that's information I did not know before.
It's just mostly being cut away, so you just think that, like, it's an area of skin. Or, like, scar tissue around my chest, but around my pelvis region.
Are you just not wearing pants? Or, like...
I'm wearing pants, but it just finds its way out because it's been cut into... Imagine when you cut a hot dog down the middle.
Uh-huh.
And then it's just sort of fallen apart. And it just finds its way out through various cracks and things. Like, it's like one of those Play-Doh extruders.
Yep.
You know when it comes out in like 19 different... It's like that. It's all penis, but none of it's really penis. It's all
there penis. There you go. People who are drawing are fan art. Things that you need to think about when you're drawing Banfor.
Just remember there's a little penis, bit of cock.
No cock. Everyone. Bing.
Okay, and after taking that damage from the black furred or black haired, we're still having this debate. Bat creature, it is now Banfor's turn. So you have disadvantage because the tan one is still within your sight and you're afraid of it, but you can freely attack the black one, or you can attack the grey one or the tan one, but only at range. You can't move closer to it.
So the black, okay. So I'm going to enter a rage. That's a no-brainer. So currently in a rage. Now I have two more actions to take. I would like to throw a javelin at the tan one, and I'm going to grapple the black one.
Yep.
So I'm going to jump up and grab the black one and force it down to the ground.
Okay, so you will have probably logistically do the javelin first.
Yes.
Yeah, both of these actions are at disadvantage.
No worries. Boom. So that's a 18 and a 17.
Yep, okay, yep. So 17 hits, so you even at disadvantage, even though you're terrified of the tan one, you manage to throw your javelin. So roll some damage for that.
It's not great. So it's a 6 to damage, plus... 2 plus 2? Plus 5, sorry. Because I'm raging? No, that was only with martial weapons. Do I get raging with
javelin? There's plus your strength, plus your, raging. So, plus 5.
So plus 5. Cool. So that's 12 damage.
Okay, sweet. And then you were grappling this... You're going to try and grapple this black one. Maths 12. Okay, so that's a contested... athletics check.
Cool, no worries.
Again with disadvantage.
So that's a 23 and a 15.
Okay, you had to beat a 14, so you managed to grapple the black one and tackle it down to the porch or down to the...
To the ground.
Near flaming grass.
To the burning ground. Okay. To the flaming grass.
Cool. Banfor is now...
Because I now have... Yep, I now have, because I have resistance against fire, so at most I assume it's going to do a d4, so at most it's going to do a 2 to me, and this thing I assume doesn't have any sort of resistance, so let's fucking tango, bruh.
Banfor's thinking, and now Arcus.
Mm.
I'd love to cast Guiding Bolt at the tan one.
Cool, so roll that with disadvantage.
9. Wait, plus. Yeah, 9.
9. Okay, that misses. So you just cast this Kamehameha of radiant light out towards it, and it easily dodges out of the way. And it just sails away into the darkness.
Typical. Can I do Spiritual Weapon as a bonus action? I've got it as a bonus action in my thing.
Yeah, you can cast that as a bonus, and then that just gives you a weapon that you can sort of make anything you want.
Yeah. I'll go back. I think last time I did this, I made it like a javelin type thing. I think I'll go back to that.
Okay, cool. So you got this cool like spirit ghost javelin that sort of hovers around you as if you're wielding it.
Yeah.
Sweet, and now it is the grey one, which is going to
reverse follow the trajectory of that guiding bolt and swoop down and try and attack you. Because the only other targets are a tree or someone rolling in the grass with its friend. It's going to try and slash you with claws for a 21.
Oof. Yeah, that hurts.
Yeah, so that is 8 slashing damage and 8 psychic damage.
Oh. Just to keep with the times, instead of saying that hits, should we say that slaps?
Doesn't that mean like it's a good thing? That slaps, man.
That slaps.
Yeah, I think that slaps. That's good.
Mm. Okay, yeah, so that comes up to Arcus on the porch and slashes across you with claws, and then, yeah, it hurts your brain at the same time.
Great.
And now it's Marley.
Just one question. I may just be being stupid, but do I get to attack with the spiritual weapon as well? Because it does say, as a bonus action on your turn, you can repeat, you can, when you cast it, you're supposed to attack with it, and then you can repeat the attack as well as a bonus action.
Oh, okay. Sure.
So was I able to attack when I cast that?
We'll say yes. Why not? We'll retcon that you made an attack against, which one?
The tan one again, probably.
Okay, yep. So again, that attacks with disadvantage.
Okay, I got a 18.
Nice. So yeah, you use your spiritual javelin, soars true, and attacks the tan one in the sky. Roll your damage. What damage type does it do? Does it do piercing because it's a javelin, or is it spiritual?
Force.
It's force damage, okay.
Yeah, it says force damage on this.
Cool.
So 7.
7 total on the 10.
Oh, wait, 4. Sorry, no, 6. No, wait, I can do math, hold on.
100! Plus.
Wait, I rolled a 4, and then it's plus 5, so that's...
9?
9, yeah.
That's
and then it says... No, and then it says it's plus 2 force damage, I think. So, 11. Math.
Come on, you're killing me here. Okay, and now it's Marley's turn. You magically become a half-elf again and have a vague recollection of being made of bark, and like you cough out a leaf.
Nice. She kind of casts around magically and she's like, I swear I already cast Hail of Thorns. Hail of Thorns! Like, she does it again. She's like, wait, what? Like, did I not do that last time? You know? So she does it again and then goes to fire.
Which one?
Has everybody been hitting the tan one? Or actually, because I wouldn't know that because I'm a tree. Does any of them look particularly...
I wouldn't know that.
So you see one of them is rolling... You see one of them is rolling around in the grass with Banfor. The Banfor is rolling around with the black one. And Arcus has the grey one right up against them.
Okay. So I guess seeing what's around, she would go, okay, well, I guess you're mine then.
Okay.
Cool. So, I miss. Well, I assume I miss. Because I rolled a 10.
Yes. You miss with
your crossbow. I've rolled a 1, and then I've rolled a 2. So my dice is doing really well so far.
Okay, and I forgot to get Banfor and Arcus after your turns to roll another wisdom save to see if you overcome your fear.
Ah.
So if you can go and do that now.
Wisdom, eh?
Oh, nice. 21.
Okay, 10. Arcus is not afraid anymore. Banfor still is.
Nice.
You still see that tan one and you're like, oh, I've got the willies.
I have got several willies.
It's actually just one cut into several parts.
It's just like when you put Play-Doh through the thing, but it makes it into like 19 different sausages.
Gross.
Gross.
Yeah, and the tan one is now going to swoop down and try and claw attack Marley, who just failed to fire bolts at it. And it's going to slash away at you for a 6 to hit, which is not going to do it, obviously. So it's right in your face, and it's just got this horrible, like, toothy mouth and really sharp eyes and ears, and it's slashing away at you, and you just dodge back out of the way. And now it is the black one, which is rolling around with Banfor, and while you're grappling it, it's just going to use its turn to roll an athletics check to try and fly upward while you're still holding it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just going to try and get up like 60 feet in the air. And I would say with a 19, it manages to do so. So it flies up really high above this town with you still holding on to it.
But I'm still holding on to it and grappling it, so it can't attack me.
Yep, and now it's your turn.
Cool. So now I have three attacks. And so I'm going to use all three attacks. So I'm going to assume that I'm doing like a BJJ, like a rear mount. So I'm rear mounting around its sort of the back of its pelvis, and I'm just going to bring the axle down in three brutal stabbing maneuvers. Would I have disadvantage on these now?
Narratively, I would say no, because it's kind of a captive target. It can't really get away from you. It'd be hard for you to miss.
But I have advantage on an attack roll against creatures that I'm grappling as my feet. So I have advantage.
Yes, correct. Yeah. So cool. You have advantage, but that is cancelled out by the fact you have disadvantage from being afraid of the tan one.
Okay, right. So we'll just go straight up as it is.
So it's just three straight up attacks.
Okay, so one of those came out.
It's interesting how you do that while you're hanging on to something, eh? The rules don't actually say that, but I find it a really interesting image in my head. You know, like, I'm like, how do you...
Got his legs wrapped around it.
Yeah. So, that was a 9. I'm going to re-roll it with luck. So that's come out. So first roll was a 24. Second roll is a 10. Third roll is a 15.
Okay, that's one hit.
Fuck me, Christ. All right. Here we go. So plus, so that's 11 damage. That's 11 damage.
Okay. Yeah, so you try and stab it three times, but because you're hanging on by your legs and it's flying, you're like swinging loose and wild, but one of them manages to plunge into its back and it lets out this screech into the night. And it is now Arcus's turn.
I would like to cast Thunder Wave, which is each creature in a 15-foot cube originating from you must make a constitution saving throw.
Okay, so that would be just the charcoal grey one, which attacked you.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
And that failed its con save.
Cool. Great. Alright, then that is 4, 9, 10, 12, 18. Thunderwave damage.
So yeah, and it gets sent back.
And it gets, 10 feet.
Yeah, so I'd say it gets thrown back into the flames in the burning grass.
Yes.
And in doing so, it will take a bit of fire damage. It will take 5 fire damage. Cool. Do you still have your spiritual weapon?
It lasts for a minute.
Okay, so you can attack with that spirit javelin now if you want to as well.
Awesome. Okay. 20. Not nat, but...
Yep, okay. Yeah, that's a hit too.
And 4 damage.
4 force damage.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so you shoot your spiritual spear out straight out at this grey one that's in the flames, and it strikes true, and it screeches out into the night. And now it's Marley once again. The tan one is in your face.
Marley's probably just going to pull a Marley. When shit gets in her face and she can't hide her crossbow. So she's just gonna scream Thunderwave in this thing's face, and my con's a 16.
Yep, sweet. That's a 9.
Nish. Oh, fuck you. Sorry. It's like 1, 2, 2. So, 9 damage. Big fucking 9. Because my dice rolled like pieces of shit.
Okay, 9, and I'd say it gets thrust back 10 feet into the flames in the grass.
Yeah.
And in doing so, it also takes 4 fire damage. Okay, and now it's that one's turn, and it's just going to screech and then try and do the same thing again. Fly towards you very fast and go for another claw attack.
Okay.
It is a 24.
Yeah.
Cool, so that is 9 slashing and 14 psychic.
Cool.
And the black one is just going to try and get out of your grapple, Banful. Okay, that's a 10.
Well, I'll tell you what, I got a 24.
Okay, so it is still grappled. And now it's your turn.
I will attack thrice. Mm. Do 18. 19. 14. I have no more luck, so 18, 19, 14.
Okay, that's 2 hits.
Cool. Boom. 7, so 14 damage total.
And now Arcus. Still standing on the porch with the grey one 10 feet away from you in the flames.
Yeah, I'd like to cast Shatter. So each creature in a 10-foot radius of a point that I choose. How many can I get in this level of sound?
They're just one. There's only one that's stand. Oh, you could get the grey one, or you could get the tan one and Marley together, or you can get the black one and Banfort together.
I'll just go for the grey one. So you just need to make a constitution save.
Okay, that is a 7.
That fails. So I've hit, sorry, you fail, I win. And 12 thunder damage.
Nice, describe the way that kills the grey one.
So it's just like a really loud, painful noise, and they're bats, right? So they've got sonar hearing.
Yeah.
So it just like collapses as blood trickles out of its ears. Clutching at its head like it's trying to rip out its ears. And then it dies.
That is grotesque and a great way for a creature that can do frightening screeches to die.
Yeah. Payback.
Cool. And we're back around to Marley.
I will just shoot a first level Thunder Wave at it instead.
Okay.
So still 16 to save.
Con save, that is a 9.
What's a bet I roll better with 2 d8 than I did with 4? What's a bet? Yep, I did. That's a 14 with 2 d8 rather than the 4 d8, which only rolled a 9.
Okay, describe the way your Thunder Wave kills the tan one.
It's just a wall of force, basically. So it just like smacks into it and you see its skin ripple and peel off it.
Oh, gross.
Yeah.
And some of it lands in the flames and sizzles up and becomes bat meat.
Pretty much.
I want to see this episode animated. Just the peeling of the skin.
And it would be the tan one's turn, but it's very dead. The black one is just going to once again try and shake free of Banfor, or try and shake Banfor off of it, I should say. That is only a 9 on a contested check.
Okay. I hopefully can beat that with a 15.
Okay, yeah, you successfully maintain your grapple, and it's now your turn.
I mean, I've got just the one target still, so I'm going to attack thrice. As my usual. 23 hits.
Yep.
And a 20 unnatural.
Yep, 2 hits.
I think I can probably survive the 4. Here we go. 6 damage and not that much. 5 damage, so 11 damage total.
Okay. You stab your sword into the back of this black bat creature and it lets out a very pained screech and then it stops fighting you and it begins to fall to the ground.
As a reaction, Banfor is going to invoke the Blood Curse of the Fallen Puppet and use the reaction to have it make a single weapon attack against its friend that is closest to the ground.
It's the only remaining one.
I'm going to make a resurgent Blood Puppet make an attack against the fire on the ground, giving it an intention to descend.
You know what? I like that you're using your Blood Curse, so I will allow this. You convince, as it's falling to the ground, you convince this corpse of a bat creature to attack the flames. And I'm not going to roll for it to attack because it's flames. But yeah, it sort of steers itself towards the flames and swipes its claws, and then it harmlessly just slumps to the ground, and you manage to very gently
step off it,
like dismount from it. And now you're standing in the tall grass. There is a huge bonfire lighting up the night, and that is the end of the episode.
And that's the end of the
episode.
Yay. Success.
Yay.
You defeated some things. Banfor flew.
Batman.
Man bat.
I guess
that's the end of our episode.
When we reconvene, we're going to have to figure out what happens to this village. Whether you just let it burn.
I think we probably will.
Yeah.
Get your friend out of the drawer.
If you remember.
We'll get her to burn the rest of the town down. We've already tried to get her onto the arsonist streak. Or just wake her up and be like, look what you've done in your sleep. Give her problems.
Flying horrors in the night, Banfor's bonfires in the street, a Marley tree on the porch, a drunk goblin in a drawer? What doesn't this episode have? And will they put out that potentially devastating fire? I guess you'll have to find out next time. A big hey, hello, howdy doody to our awesome Patreon supporters. Alex White Robinson, Person Who Wants to Stay Anonymous, Robert Baldino from Not Quite Heroes Podcast, Irene Cucci, Laura Kristen Goodwin, and James Blyces from Wheel of Woe Podcast, Sijah Hodgkins, Laura Douglas, Mel Ziegler, Rod Draft, Matt Sal Malcolm from Table Tales, Kydron Faust, Lauren Fate, Kai Dealove, Rihanna Kavalsic, Kevin Swift from The Dice Cult, Ben Edwards, Victorian Gavin Porter, Daniel Nichols from the Happy Go Lucky Podcast, KP, and Squished. We could not make this show without your support, and we appreciate you. As always, don't forget to hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Those are all, like I said at the beginning, at fateofison, or email fateofison@gmail.com. Or jump onto the Necropodicon Network Discord server. A link to that, as I said before, is on our website, fateofison.com. There's also cast profiles and some really sweet fan art there, and links to the wiki as well. So head on over to fateofison.com to just get you a fistful of ison. That's a weird thing to say, but it's a true thing to say. Alrighty, see you next time, everybody. Thank you very much for listening.
Hello, I'm Dr. Discord, and I have one question for you. Are you evil? Do you find yourself secretly rooting for the bad guy? Do you find yourself suppressing a little chuckle when somebody else slips and falls? Do you find yourself secretly wishing for global domination? If you answered yes to any of these questions, check out Unnecessary Evil Podcast, where we discuss all things evil, from tips on how to write a better villain to tips on how to be a better villain. I probably won't even leave any booby traps this time. Part of the Necropodicon Network. Necropodicon. Hard to pronounce, easy to listen.
Hey, Waffles.
Hey, Mario.
Hey, we've got 30 seconds to talk about what our podcast is about. What do you want to do?
Waffles and Mario talk about things.
Mm.
How would you describe the podcast?
I describe it as a podcast where both of us, being funny people, talk about things that we find funny.
Well, do we have to find it funny?
No, we don't. We very rarely find things funny.
Can we just talk about things and then we find the humor in that?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't laugh. I'm a sociopath.
You are.
Yeah. And so are you.
I am.
And that's what our podcast is about.
Two sociopaths talking about things.
Yes.
Necropodicon. Hard to pronounce? Easy to listen.